This is your community radio station, 88.3 Southern FM.
Welcome to the Space Show. Coming up right now. Welcome to the Space Show, presented by members of the Space Association of Australia. Hello, I'm Andrew Rennie. On this evening's The Space Show, NASA, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, is 65 years old, and we trace its first decade in word, poetry and song as we set the groundwork for the Artemis 3 lunar mission we will discuss next week.
Let's take a trip to the moon. Come on, let's go for the moon. I wanna go to the moon. Let's take a trip to the moon.
When the Soviet Union launched the world's first artificial satellite, Sputnik 1, on 1957, October the 4th. Hey, that's the anniversary today, October the 4th. Space research and applications in the United States were the domain of the military and universities. After much negotiation, Congress passed an act to form a civilian space agency that would absorb the National Advisory Committee for Aeronautics. When the National Aeronautics and Space Administration came into being 55 years ago, on 1958, October the 1st, no one realized that its acronym, NASA, N-A-S-A, would become a worldwide household recognised brand to the extent that it's quite common to see Australians walking the streets wearing T-shirts wearing the agency's logo. Even before NASA came into existence, President Eisenhower had decided the new agency, and not the Air Force, would have the job of placing a man into orbit. The Air Force had coveted that role for many, many years. By the time NASA opened for business in October the 1st, the basic design of a manned capsule was complete. The first NASA administrator, Keith Glennon, on seeing the design, simply said on October the 7th, "Let's get on with it." And on 1958, December the 17th, it was officially announced as Project Mercury. Well, we've got here a documentary which was issued with a Hasbro Mercury space capsule toy. So if you had bought the toy, you could hear this introduction to the manned Mercury space flight.
Welcome to Manned Space Exploration. Your Hasbro space capsule closely resembles a spacecraft, first in a series of manned space flights by the United States. Mercury's primary purpose was to launch an American astronaut into orbit around the Earth and then return him safely. This feat was successfully accomplished on February 20th, 1962, when John Glenn Jr. in Mercury's Friendship 7 completed a three-orbit flight. The actual Mercury spacecraft is 6 feet in diameter and 9 feet tall. Sitting in a special form-fitting couch with his back toward the large base of the spacecraft, the astronaut faces a complex instrument panel. Your space capsule has a control panel much like the real one. As you can see, there are many dials, lights, buttons, clocks, and switches. All are important to the success of manned space exploration. As you will hear during spaceflight, the astronaut is able to communicate with the Launch Site Control Center, now known as Cape Kennedy, Florida, and also with each ground station as he orbits. In order to easily place your astronaut inside the capsule and fasten his seatbelt, your spacecraft has a large sliding window. This sliding window does not exist in the real Mercury space capsule. The actual spacecraft has a small hatch or opening through which the astronaut must crawl. His only view of the outside is seen through a small window or through his periscope. The astronaut enters the spacecraft 2 hours before blastoff time. This two-hour period is used for checking and rechecking the space capsule's instruments and equipment. Later you will hear part of the countdown. As the countdown ends, the Atlas, with the Mercury payload on top, blasts off. About 5 minutes after blastoff, the spacecraft separates from the Atlas, and small jet rockets turn the spacecraft around, blunt nose first. The orbit is about 100 miles high, and the capsule's speed is approximately 17,500 miles an hour. Friendship 7 made 3 orbits of the Earth. Each orbit took 90 minutes. Near the end of the third orbit, 3 small retro rockets, facing forward, were fired to slow the capsule down for its descent to Earth. If you listen carefully to the actual space communication, you will hear the astronaut confirm firing of the retro rockets. As the spacecraft speeds toward Earth, pressure of the atmosphere generates heat up to 3,000 degrees Fahrenheit on the heat shield. At 20,000 feet and 10,000 feet, parachutes are let out to slow down the descent to Earth. Again, listen carefully and hear the astronaut describe the parachute as he views it from the spacecraft. The Mercury space capsule always lands in the ocean, where the United States vessels and helicopters wait for the splashdown. The name Steelhead, heard on this record, refers to a Navy ship heading for the recovery of both capsule and astronaut. With helmet, one-piece suit, boots, and gloves, your Hasbro astronaut is dressed in a spacesuit similar to all astronauts. Now to the actual excerpts of blastoff, spaceflight, and splashdown.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Operating, we're underway.
You're loud and clear.
Roger, we're programming and roll okay. A little bumpy along about here.
Roger. Stand by for 20 seconds.
Roger.
2, 1, mark.
Roger, backup clock is started. Fuel 102, 101, oxygen 78, 100, amps 27.
Roger, loud and clear. Flight path is good.
Roger, 0G, and I feel fine. Capsule is turning around. Oh, that view is tremendous.
Roger, turnaround has started.
Roger, capsule turning around, and I could see the booster during turnaround just a couple of hundred yards behind me. It was beautiful.
Roger, 7, you have a go at least 7 orbits.
Roger. Understand, go for at least 7 orbits. This is Friendship 7. Can see clear back a big cloud pattern way back across toward the Cape. Beautiful sight.
Roger, still reading loud and clear. Next transmission, Bermuda.
Roger. Understand, next transmission, Bermuda. Capsule did damp okay and turned around. Scope has extended okay. Taking off the filter I had on it before launch. Ready for impact, almost down. Cochrane, Zip 7, getting close, standing by.
Roger.
There we go. Friendship 7, impact. Rescue aids is manual.
Friendship 7, this is Steelhead. We have you visually. I'm closing now. Should be ready to effect recovery in approximately 4 minutes, over.
Roger, 4 minutes to recovery. My condition is good.
In the 1980s, Harold Groot recorded a song called Mercury, Our First Steps that summarized the Mercury Project.
It seems like only yesterday, perhaps at most the day before, a child watched a TV set and listened to the Redstone's roar. I watched each second of that flight, and never did I think to leave. 15 minutes, not so long, except when you forget to breathe. Freedom 7 in the sky, Shepherd rides the glory trail, soars 100 miles high, starts a dream that must not fail. Bell was next to fly. Once again, the voices whispered, you can't succeed until you try. A journey safe through upper reaches, parachutes were simple free. But too soon, escape both blew, and inward flows a rushing sea. Copter engines overheating, struggles with each wave, child's heart a hammer beating, it's the man that you must save. The Friendship 7 lifted off, the third for Project Mercury, powered by an Atlas booster, Glenn would stay for Orbits 3. Excitement, none matched Al and Gus and John. Child's dream is lost and gone. I'm not needed on that team, but the vision still shines on, for a man can also dream.
Now, the Mercury Project was followed by the Project Gemini, two people in space, Apollo, three people to the moon, Skylab, three people orbiting, and Space Shuttle, up to seven or eight people in orbit around the Earth. Well, now the 65-year-old space agency is working on Artemis. On this evening's The Space Show, we look first at NASA itself and then at some of the early Apollo missions. In the following 2 weeks, we will examine the plans for the Artemis landings on the moon. So here is William Shatner with a piece written by Ray Bradbury on Why Does NASA Exist?
NASA exist. Why do we exist? Why does life exist upon this strange and lonely planet? How did we arrive, and for what reason? An age-old question, one that each of us at one time or another has asked. Each time, the universe responds with silence. NASA stands before that silence and probes that mystery. We stand with NASA in response to the incredible miracle of impossible life on an insensate world. We move back to a moon that we wish we had never deserted. We move onward to Mars to establish a base, and then a community, and finally a miniature civilization on its enigmatic soil. All this will be done not as a technological feat, a military exercise, or as a display of human vanity. We do it because NASA has realized that the universe, which extends for billions of light years in all directions, is meaningless unless... Unless what? Unless there are observers and caretakers of that stunning interstellar display, the universe demands to be noticed, to be seen, and dutifully noted. What use all those incredible firework dimensions if no eye fixes and reflects, no brain takes notes, no heart moves with passion at the display? NASA answers the silent cry of the cosmos for recognition. NASA is the witness, and we, fellow witnesses, to the endless deeps. NASA's activities are our activities. The purpose of life on Earth is to see, to know, and to tell what the cosmos has to offer. Without us, human beings, without NASA, the universe would be unseen, unknown, untouched, a mindless abyss of stars asked to be discovered. So NASA, in the coming years, will be chief witness, and we, as fellow observers, celebrants to the cause. NASA and we have been given a job by a genetic accident and surprise of crying, lo, to an unsolvable territory. NASA and we do this to see, to know, and to prevail. Life, one day on Earth, will vanish through intemperate heat or cold. We prepare ourselves for the time of going away to other worlds, to other stars. Why? Because we love and value this life and living that has been given to us. Our obligation, and to see and know and try to understand. First then the moon, then threshold Mars, and one far future day, to landfall some world adrift near Alpha Centauri. Can NASA do this? Can we run tandem with NASA and live forever or a million years, whichever comes first? We can. We will. We must.
The thoughts of Ray Bradbury, science fiction writer, as narrated by William Shatner. And now the thoughts of Helene Knox.
NASA by Helen Knox. Parapets within a spoon. Streak of truth within a lie. Astronauts collect the moon, then splash home to die.
As we've noted, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration in the United States is intending to head back to the moon, and the Australian Space Agency doesn't want to be left out. And to that end, the Australian government has an agreement with NASA for a small Australian-made rover to be sent to the moon as part of its Artemis mission. The rover, which aims to launch in 2026, is part of the NASA Moon to Mars mission. The semi-autonomous rover will be used to collect lunar soil, more properly called regolith, which contains oxides. Using separate equipment that will be sent to the moon with the rover, NASA will aim to extract oxygen from the regolith. This would be a key step towards establishing a sustainable human presence on the moon, as well as supporting future missions to Mars. Now, two Australian consortia are currently working on early stage concepts for the rover. The Australian Space Agency has launched a competition to name the rover. They want this rover name to be uniquely Australian and reflect the Aussie spirit, our Aussie ingenuity, and the excitement of this historic occasion. So, if you would like to name the rover, this is what you need to do. 1. Come up with a great name for the rover. 2. Explain why you think it is a good name for the rover. And 3. Enter these details at www.space.com. www.space.gov.au. So it's www.space.gov.au. If you can't remember that, if you just use your web search engine to go Australian Space Agency, and you'll no doubt be able to find it there. Now, the closing date for this competition is on October the 20th. After that date, the Australian Space Agency will create a shortlist from these submissions, and they will then put them to a public vote later in the year. So the date to remember, the closing date for entries is Friday, October the 20th of this year at 1 minute to midnight Australian Eastern Daylight Time. So be in to win.
You're listening to 88.3 Southern FM, the sounds of the Bayside.
Where we are celebrating the 65th anniversary of NASA. And NASA has interns. Internship is not a particularly well-known phenomena here in Australia, but it is in the United States. And they have interns at the Johnson Space Center, which is in Houston, Texas. And in 2016, they recorded this, Welcome to NASA.
Open up the airlock, pop. It's NASA, come on, turn it up,
turn it up.
Here they go from control and then the count begins. Cause we ain't done this before, so strap on in. Make yourself at home here on Orion. Here we go, launch off, carried by SLS. Hear the voice in my ear, taking out with no fear. We know Mars ain't near, but NASA is here, here. Welcome to NASA. Houston, take control now. Our scientists know how to get us off the ground. Welcome to Johnson at NBLU Dive. In the humidity we thrive. Check our Saturn V. Welcome to Johnson. Just can't wait. Thinking about walking out, doing EVs. 6 months have passed, we wanna celebrate. Touch down on Mars, time to stretch our legs. To the planet that's red, got helmets on our head. Trekking through the stars, we're gonna live on Mars, Mars. Journey to red Mars.
Just relax.
Welcome to red Mars. All our days are slower. Our gravity is lower. Hi to all the rovers. Welcome to our home. Gallium on Resin. Star and Martian rocking. We're our only fans. Welcome to our home.
It's NASA.
Not everyone supports the work that NASA does. It does wonderful things. And sometimes, you know, people think, oh, it should have done more. And other times they think, wow, they spend too much money. Well, as they say, no bucks, no Buck Rogers. This is Alice, who calls herself Alice at NASA, and she has the NASA Workforce Lament.
alice@nasa.gov. The NASA workforce lament 1993-95. When I was in high school, we went to the moon. I pray that our children will be part of that soon. That one shining moment when the world shared one mind. When we forgot all our differences and were just humankind. Ad astra per aspera and off to the stars. In 89, we believed there'd be footprints on Mars. In our hearts rang the challenge, to the moon and to Mars. The clarion call you can reach for the stars. But the red team wrote white papers and we began realizing that you don't inspire much with the slogan downsizing. We've been red teamed and blue teamed and strategically planned. Identified workforce to be strategically canned. We've been reviewed by our peers and by merit reviewers. From the NAS and the NAC and the ACLUAS. The National Facilities Review, the Fed Lab Review Team. The National Performance Review, was it only a dream? We have reviewed all our projects, had a management review. Oh, for the bureaucratic efficiency of 1992. We have cut into science, we have cut out some missions. We have prayed that our colleagues would help with attrition. We've been ethically trained to be culturally diverse. With time cards, procurement, to put safety first. Transfer technologies, promote education. In the spirit of patriotism, for the good of the nation. We have rolled and we've missioned not once, twice but thrice. Provided data on workforce by skill and by price. Reorganized headquarters, the centers and then, reduced ratios of supervisors to 1 out of 10. We have been TQ'd, have had training in AIDS. The MRT and FBI showed us how to do raids. And just when we thought, well, it's all over today. We got Bellbridge Award asks, who's this guy anyway? We have been bold and we've been revolutionary. We have scorn for tradition and things evolutionary. We've followed our leaders' plans down to the letter. But when will things get faster, cheaper, and better? We've been bought out and sold out and reduced duplication. We've zero-based, privatized and transferred with predation. We've made metrics and standards, rewrote program plans. Made roadmaps, created visions in 20-year spans. The result? No scientists in NASA, no in-house hardware. Technology? Maybe, but launches elsewhere. Pretty soon NASA's workforce is going to be scary. With just managers, bureaucrats and one secretary. And from LA to Houston and across to the Cape. We say if this process is streamlined, bring back the red tape. But for our children and yours, we'll help lower the debt. And streamlined bureaucracy is the best carrot yet. But we laid off good people, with an SSC bent. Does it help to have US innovators on unemployment? Our role in education NASA vows not to shirk. But will kids aspire technically when we're all out of work? These actions and analyses and hasty assignments, in response to complex and conflicting vague guidance, are producing ideas more disparate than true. And the bureaucracy is worse now than it was 92. So the workforce unites on this question, you know. You've brought us together, both NASA and GOCO. We all have the same question despite sex, greed or race. Where can we go to resume work on space?
Now, one of the greatest achievements of NASA in its 65 years, yes, 65 years ago this week, NASA was formed. One of the great achievements was were the Apollo missions. There were quite a number of them to the moon. And last year, the Kids Learning Tube gave this reminder of those missions.
The Apollo mission brought humans to the moon, the first flight. missions were a NASA program and set a major spaceflight milestone for all humans. The Apollo program was conceived in 1960 during Dwight D. Eisenhower's presidency. Then the Apollo program started in 1961 and consisted of 11 total spaceflights and missions. Apollo was a NASA program that had American astronauts. Out of the 11 spaceflights, 6 of those resulted in moonwalks. The first 4 flights tested the equipment used in the Apollo program to see if astronauts could be sent to the moon and land. Apollo 1 attempted to launch in 1967. We lost 3 Apollo astronauts on this mission. Apollo 7 was launched in 1968 with the crew of 3. The times the crew orbited Earth was 163. Apollo 8 launched 1968 with a different crew of 3. And then the mission was also successful with Earth orbits numbering 10. Apollo 9 tested the lunar module in orbit in 69. The crew orbited the Earth 151 times. The rehearsal of the moon landing was in 69 on Apollo 10. It was a great success with 31 orbits around the Earth's bend. Apollo 11 was the first land and walk on the moon in 69. Neil Armstrong was the first to step foot on the moon for humankind in 1969. Apollo 12 was the first precision landing on the moon, which was also successful instead of ending in doom. All astronauts survived on Apollo 13, you can see, after an oxygen tank explosion in 1970. The Apollo 14 mission launched in 1971, which marked the first landing in the lunar highlands. This mission was done. The first use of the Apollo rover happened in 71 as well. This launched on Apollo 15 mission and it went real swell. Apollo 16 launched in 1972. Astronauts explored the lunar highlands. This is true. In 72, Apollo 17 was launched and nothing went wrong. This marks the last walk on the moon. Since then, no one has gone. You could visit space someday.
One of the low points in NASA's first decade was the tragedy of the death of the crew of Apollo 1 in a launch pad fire. They had been due to be launched in a few weeks later, but they had a fire on the pad. Ben Corbin has sung about Apollo 1 and the lead-up missions to the Apollo project.
Plucked from the finest of flight schools regaled, from Mitchell, Grand Rapids, and Texas they hailed, Grissom and Chaffee and Ed White unveiled, as the ones to fly the Apollo 1 test away.
Apollo 1, NASA's away with Apollo 1, fare thee well, don't stop till it's done. They're testing the crew of Apollo 1.
Sputnik surprised us when it flew overhead. Yuri then beat us, it filled us with dread. But Shepard and Glenn and Mercury led to the test, to the crew of Apollo 1. Test away,
Apollo 1. NASA's away with Apollo 1. Fare thee well, don't stop till it's done. They're testing the crew of Apollo 1.
Gemini marched on from Mercury, strategically building technology. All were completed successfully. They're testing the crew of Apollo 1. Test away,
Apollo 1. NASA's away with Apollo 1. Fare thee well, don't stop till it's done. They're testing the crew of Apollo 1.
The new Saturn V will be finished up soon. We'll use propaganda and Disney cartoons and
beat the damn commies with men on the moon. They're testing the crew of Apollo 1.
Test away.
Apollo 1. NASA's away with Apollo 1. Fairly well, don't stop till it's done. They're testing the crew of Apollo 1.
They are testing the crew of Apollo 1.
Apollo 1 by Stuart Atkinson. They weren't fools. They knew they might die, but thought it would happen somewhere up in the sky, on the way to the moon. Most likely, as their swan-white Saturn V blew itself apart, all its tons of fuel blooming into an ugly, dirty fireball, raining bodies and bolts into the sea below. Or stranded on the moon inside a mortally wounded lunar excursion module, its legs buckled and bent after their landing went wrong, leaving them staring at Earth through a tear in their spaceship's Coke can-thin skin as their air ran out. Not there, not strapped into their chairs for a simple test with the rest of the world looking the other way, unaware they were even up there, high above the lapping waves, hands slapping at the locked hatch. Burning. You're listening to The Space Show, which is presented by members of the Space Association of Australia.
88.3 Southern FM.
Where on The Space Show, we are looking back 65 years to the formation of NASA and looking at its first decade. Apollo 7 was the first of the manned Apollo missions, three people into Earth orbit. For that occasion, James Dickey wrote this poem, "A Poet Witnesses a Bold Mission." A Poet Witnesses a Bold Mission by James Dickey. Someone brought in an elk head. It has become a kind of custom for the astronauts to give the commander of the next flight something to take with him. Two nights before the flight, the elk head sat in a chair, the glass eyes unfathomable, and the men moved in the room and talked. And if you were near enough to the elk, you could see the astronauts in tiny replicas of themselves in the animal eye. One was saying his greatest ambition was to learn to play the guitar. Another was showing a poem he had written. It was good. He was proud of it. Another had just come in from hunting doves. His name was Shirah, and the elk head was for him. The great branching antlers were part of the earth that is natural and wild and lovable. Nothing at all like the awesome rocket these brave, competent men would ride. The elk was part of what would be left behind when Shirah and the others carried the human consciousness outward from where it has always been. In a sense, they are all poets, expanders of consciousness beyond its known limits. Because of them, the death, cold, and blazing craters of the moon will think with us, and the waterless oceans of Mars. The glowing frogs of Venus will say what they are. And those places will change us also. We have not lived them yet, and perhaps have no language adequate to them. But these men will find that, too, as they plunge with their fragile and full humanity, with their wives and children, with their gardens and grocery lists and head colds and ideas for poems and clowns of their childhood circuses, as they plunge with all of us up from the flame trench, up from the launch umbilical tower, up from the elk and the butterfly, up from the meadows and rivers and mountains and the beds of waves into the universal cavern, into the mathematical abyss to find us and return to tell us what we will be. Well, Apollo 7 was a success in Earth orbit, and the next mission, Apollo 8, went all the way to orbit the moon. It went into orbit around the moon and did 10 orbits.
Views of Our Sphere by Ernest Sandin. We deserved that Earth shot from the moon's asbestos gray horizon. A family portrait of the old homestead. Yet not a single one of us could be seen, and the only history being made was storm swirls over rocks and oceans. So our prophets from as long ago as the close of paradise had at last a picture to illustrate their remarks. As the atoms in our invisible heads go on blasting out toward darker and darker lights, what can we hope for but smaller and smaller snapshots of this place already small and lonesome enough? The countdown, however, is pulsing in all our engineered spaces of mind. And each flight now must explode into the next till we and our shape in the sun and our weather vanish altogether. Altogether.
Our next poem was published in Life magazine on 1969, January the 10th, after the return of those three intrepid explorers of the moon on Apollo 8. First Manned Moon Orbit by James Dickey. So long. So long as the void is hysterical, bolted out, you float on nothing. But procedure alone. Eating, sleeping like a man, deprived of the weight of his own and all humanity in the name of a new life. And through this, making new time slowly, the moon comes. Its mountains bulge. They crack and hold together, closer, spreading, smash crust of uncanny rock, ash glowing, alchemizing the sun. With peace, with the peace of a country, bombed out by the universe. You lean back from the great light-shattered face, the pale blaze of Godstone coming. Close. Too close, and the dead seas turn, the craters hover, turn their dark side to kill the radio and the one voice of Earth. You and your computers have brought out the silence of mountains the animal eye has not seen since the Earth split. Since God first found geometry, would move in mysterious ways. You hang, mysteriously pulling, the moon dark pulling, and solitude breaks down like an electrical system. Is it something? Else nothing is something? Something I am trying to say, O God, Almighty, to come back, to complete the curve, to come back, singing with procedure, back through the last dark of the moon, past the dim ritual random stones of oblivion, and through the blinding edge of moonlight into the sun. And behold, the blue planet steeped in its dream of reality, its calculated vision shaking with the only love.
Hi, I'm Sasha Sagan, author of For Small Creatures Such as We, and this is The Crew of Apollo 8 by Elaine V. Emmons. Shall we call them poets for having observed on their earliest times around the moon that it seemed to be layered with a grayish white beach sand with footprints in it? Or geologists for having reported to us the 6 or 7 terraces leading down into Crater Langrenus? Or shall we call them some new breed of bird for having swiftly flown, weightless and unfearing and sharp-eyed, into the dark unknown? Yet words to tell of their skill and valiancy are as weak as water. And their return and being earthlings with us again are what most matter.
This is the Space Show, looking at the first 10 years of NASA, which was formed 65 years ago. And now we continue with our look at Apollo 8, the first one to orbit the moon with people aboard. And this time, it's another poem by Stuart Atkinson. Earthrise by Stuart Atkinson. Some believe that photo planted the seeds of environmentalism. Others believe it was purely luck, a snap grabbed by a giddy Anders as he looked out of the CS-103's window and saw the home world sliding out from behind the moon. It doesn't matter which is true. Remember, in those heady Apollo days when anything was possible, cameras weren't the computers we have today. The Hasselblads those adventurers used had no swiveling view screens, no menus to scroll through, no wafer-slim SD cards with enough room for 1,000 images of sunsets, clouds and cats. They were silver shoeboxes with a sighting ring and used the strange stuff called film. Google it, kids, and read in disbelief how, in ye olden days, photographs with physical things, portraits painted by photons, on long thin rolls that had to be drenched in chemicals before your precious images appeared, as if by magic, between their borders of holes. But one chaste kiss of sunlight, 1 minute left too long in the developing tank, and that was that. Every picture lost and no data recovery software to save the day. Ought today's astronauts snap away with no concerns for running out of film? It is a different world. Floating in shirt sleeves in the space station's cupola, they can shoot the same scene 1,000 times, keep the best and just delete the rest away. Back then, every frame was sacred. You had to be sure it was worth pressing that shutter button before your sniper's fingers twitched and, snick, a precious frame was used. And so was taken Earthrise. Eyes full of wonder, saw a scene that screamed out to be immortalized, and with a click it was, with Ansel Adams's ghost looking over Anders' shoulder, nodding in approval. The events that NASA has done has captured the popular imagination, and this song by Adam and the Ants is called Apollo 9, but it's not really about Apollo 9. It's about an astronaut philanderer, and he's found out by his wife. On next week's The Space Show, more about the Apollo missions and looking forward to the Artemis 3 mission. First landing on the moon in more than 50 years. I don't worry, things are fine, way up there in a-
send me.